Hey guys, Fly on the Wall is back for another season. That's right, on audio and video every Monday and Thursday.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.
Bye-bye. Oh, you tripping. I'm out of here anyway. Please, Dad.
The top of the hour is being brought to you by Northwestern Football, Chicago's Big Ten team. Tickets for the Aer Lingus College Football Classic in Dublin, Ireland are on sale now. Head to NUSports.com for details. And Transition is being brought to you by Amy Kite of Keller Williams Realty Infinity. On tomorrow's show, Herbie, what are we doing on tomorrow's show?
We're reviewing the Illinois Purdue game with Jeremy Warner.
Ah! Okay, are you got everything settled to watch the game tonight? Are you ready to go?
Yeah, I got the remote in the right hand tonight. It's going to be a great game. Purdue's the best team I've seen in college basketball this year. They dominated the game versus Illinois for portions of it, even though they went to double overtime. I just thought the Illini didn't match up properly with them. And like Jeremy said, the key, the X factor, is our guy Andre Cabello. If he doesn't turn the ball over, I think Illinois has a chance.
So we'll break down the game between Illinois and Purdue tomorrow with our good friend Jeremy Warner. We'll do some – I'm actually like now like in the mood to really do some Super Bowl stuff. And maybe tomorrow we'll talk a little bit more about the it becoming official that Lovie Smith is the new head coach of the Houston Texans. Parkins and Spiegel are in the house. They got you from now until 6 o'clock. What's up, boys?
What up, Lawrence? Good luck to Lovie.
Good luck to him, because he's going to need it.
Yeah.
Saw a fire alarm went off during the press conference, and people had to evacuate.
That's probably a good sign, if you believe
that's
that.
That's usually
sort of
the way you get off onto a good foot, right? That's good footing. Yeah. It's a good sign in Haiti. That's a
just a ridiculous thing, man. I still look. Come on. We'll have Hub on today. I want to ask him if he's ever seen a coaching search like this in the NFL. 5 weeks into the gig, you hire the guy who was already on your staff after his first interview. I don't think I've ever seen
hire the guy that, like, if we were doing this from a succession standpoint, who literally was the acting head coach of your team, because you fired your head coach and he was the assistant head coach, and you still didn't interview him until you hired him. It's very weird.
Well, it's very weird.
Lovie's got an opportunity to do this with class, to do it with grace, and maybe even be good at it. And I know that last one is going to be very difficult with their roster and the way that they function. But I did like him saying, you know, it's rare. I don't think a third bite at the apple for somebody who, quote, looks like me, unquote, has happened. And is that true? Is he the first black coach to get a third head coaching gig? It's a good question.
He has to be, because there have only been 20. So
yeah. I believe that is true.
He's got to be. And look at the circumstances that had to lead to it. You know?
Yep. And Lovie deserves a lot of credit. I was talking about it a little bit yesterday. If you look at his hires, like if you look at his staffs that he's put together, he's gotten people or helped them get to the next thing. And I know that, I mean, and I was at the center of the Ron Rivera stuff when he ended up leaving, but he's hired really smart people that have gone on to make careers out of the NFL, and some of them have gotten a head coaching job. Steve Wilkes had it, and he was another guy that was put in a horrible situation when he was down in Phoenix.
Perry Fuel.
And honestly, if you look at the way things set up for them as far as what the staff could look like, I remember back when we were talking about Pep Hamilton and when he was with the Bears, and there were a lot of people that thought that this was a brilliant guy, that it just wasn't quite his time. And now I feel like Pep Hamilton is in the pocket. Like, it's the type of hire that you can make that could really help you. And he's learned and he's done the head coaching thing in the XFL and all that good stuff. But Lovie's, if you look at his hiring tree, it's been pretty successful to a point. And with some of the black coaches, you understand what the ceiling is like the Steve Wilkes thing, and even with Harold Goodwin, who was on Lovey Staff, who's the assistant head coach down in Tampa, I'm shocked that he isn't getting more run in this cycle as someone who should have been interviewed. But I know that Lovey will put together a staff of teachers. That's his whole thing. And I hope that, it goes well for him. But the deck is stacked against him with that franchise.
Yeah, I don't know that Bill Belichick and Bill Walsh and Mike Tomlin, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know if a super staff can win there right now. Like, if you had Deshaun Watson, it would be different. But I don't know if you took the five best coaches in the history of the sport and you put them all on one staff, if in the short term they could win. In the long term, I'm sure they could. But in the short term, I don't know that anyone could. And that's the problem, is that it feels like this is going to be the short term for Lovey. But he got the gig and he made history in the process of doing it. And the NFL is weird. So maybe he will prove everybody wrong and overachieve. And I hope that if he does overachieve, it matters. But it might not matter. Like, they might have already made the decision that 0 wins, 3 wins, 7 wins, 9 wins, it doesn't matter. We are moving in a direction to our long-term solution at coach. His name is Josh McCown.
So now that go ahead, Lawrence.
Well, and the thing about Lovey is, like, he's made history. It's a small thing. I mean, I know that we're talking about semantics, but he is literally the first black coach to make it to the Super Bowl. It was by hours. It was only by 3 hours.
Right.
Because they got to play the NFC title game first. But he was there, and seeing him and Tony Dungy at the press conferences together, and knowing how much those two guys, like, genuinely like and love each other and respect each other's career, to see him on that stage was pretty awesome. So if any black coach is going to be given three bites at the apple, it should probably be him.
That makes sense. Now that all the nine coaching vacancies have been filled, see different people saying, you know, voting. I think PFF put it out there, like, who made the best hire, right? And I've seen other you know, publications putting it out there, and I haven't seen anybody vote for Matt Eberflus yet. I think that's going to be a tough sell just to vote for that. It might work out great. But people are not necessarily excited about that hire. But we will hear from Tony Dungy today at some point, talking about Matt Eberflus, and he has a lot of great things.
Yeah, he's on the Bears Talk podcast, and so we'll play a chunk of that. But I think that the Bears situation, now that the dust is settled, they operated a search that, compared to some of the others, was devoid of any real controversy. Like, it was weird, and there was a little bit of double talk at times, but, like, it seemed to be pretty smooth. They seemed to target and get their top choices, like the people that we thought maybe should have been their top choices, whether that was Jim Harbaugh speaks for you or mm-hmm. Brian Flores for me. They just didn't really seem to target with any, real effort. But they hired a first-time coach and a first-time GM and a first-time offensive coordinator, and it's a black general manager, and it was a diverse pool of candidates. And it's a defensive coach bucking another trend. So, like I've been saying for a while now, I feel like the way that they did it leaves them less margin for error, but there is undeniably a high ceiling with it, because any of these people could be great. Like, maybe Matt Eberflus is great. Maybe Ryan Poles is great. Maybe Luke Getsy is great. And that, I think, is where the excitement would lie. If a Bears fan is looking at me and saying, why should I be excited about this compared to the other hires out there, I'd say, it's a wild card. There is at least a high ceiling here with all of the hires that you made.
I would tell them that they don't have to be excited about it, but I agree with you, Danny. That
I said if they want to be excited, if they want to be a fan.
I don't even know if there's anything to be excited about. Like, that's what I'm saying. Like, to me, it's like, okay, like, these are solid. They seem like solid hires, and I don't know that the Bears have earned the benefit of the doubt of the fan base even trying to ramp up some excitement when there isn't any. I think that both of these guys, they have interesting philosophies. I enjoy talking to both of them, and I'm curious. Like, I think that's probably more likely than excitement, that there's some curiosity to who are these guys, what are they about, and how are we going to see their plan play out. And at some point, we'll forget about the rest of the world. I mean, you know how it is. Like, we won't worry about who hired whom in this cycle once we get to the place of starting to think about Bears football.
Absolutely. And there's going to be a ton of stuff to figure out and break down in terms of the scheme, what it's going to be, what the plan is for Justin Fields, the sequence of exposure as they reteach him in some ways. They de-naggy him a little bit, potentially. Lawrence, let me throw this at you. I mentioned to Danny before the show, Kevin Cole from Pro Football Focus put together a chart where one axis of the chart is your turnover-worthy throws, okay? The total number of bad throws you made. I guess it's percentage of your overall throws, the percentage of them that like could have been turnovers. Like, what are you doing? Putting that ball into harm's way, as we see Jimmy Garoppolo do a lot. In fact, Garoppolo is dead last in turnover-worthy throw rank, okay? Big Ben was very low on that list. Tua very low on that list. Tom Brady, number one on that list, okay? Kirk Cousins and Aaron Rodgers, Joe Burrow, Pat Mahomes, others very high on that list. Justin Fields, 10th. It's a very good ranking among all the quarterbacks. I guess that's all Bears quarterbacks, so it's not just Fields, but it's Bears quarterbacks, 10th overall in turnover-worthy throws. Then the other axis is interception.
Now, wait, did they go by percentage or total throw?
Percentage.
Okay.
Then the other
axis. I'm ready.
Interception rate. So percentage of throws that got intercepted. Okay. Tom Brady and Kirk Cousins and Aaron Rodgers are way at the top of that. Justin Fields 31st in interception rate. 31st. So what we have here is by that little simple double rank, the turnover worthy throws and the interceptions, it's sort of like a BABIP. It's a batting average of balls in play kind of thing, where he didn't put that many throws into harm's way, but most of them were intercepted. So this would speak to some bad luck in those interceptions. Does that fit your eye test? It does.
Yes.
It does mine, as I answer before I let you answer. One of my patented moves, right? I love
and,
that move.
And
you do love that move. You said it, not me.
Yeah, I know.
Now answer it.
Joe Buck at 3.
I was listening to Goff's podcast, The Full Go, and he had Matt Bowen on, and I thought that Matt said something about Fields that I kind of knew, but I needed crystallized, and he did it. He said that Fields' biggest problem, you guys know Matt, like Matt's like busting tape like nobody's business. His biggest problem is that he doesn't come off of one. That he wants to make the big play. Like the concept of touchdown and check down is very much his personality. And what he's hoping that he learns is you need to speed up that clock to come off of one earlier, because there might be some big plays that you're not seeing underneath because you're waiting for a guy to uncover.
Mm-hmm.
And when I went back, I was like, okay, like that, let me watch this with that as a premise. So I spent some time going over like Justin Fields stuff and seeing, yeah, like that's what he's doing. That in a lot of cases, he's looking for Mooney to uncover as though the one read. And it's putting in peril throws that might be easier if he comes off of one and goes to two or to three quicker.
All right.
And so, yeah, like I completely get it, and I just wonder if that's something that he spends time looking at film himself and saying, I want my guys to make big plays, but I gotta know when it's not there to get moving on to the next part of the progression.
You know, I feel like I remember a lot of bad luck on some interceptions, some tipped balls. I certainly remember Darnell Mooney's weekly drops or like the ball coming off the hands or other guys. There's one interception that was right off Damir Bird, right? He threw right to Damir Bird that popped into somebody else's arms. But I what I want to believe, Danny, is what I thought I saw for a while there, which was that Fields is careful and that if he misses high and away out of bounds. Like he makes a point to miss without putting the ball into harm's way. That's what it felt like for a while, and he's been, you know, accuracy's been praised. I want to believe that's the case, so these numbers appeal to me.
Well, I think that's good. Like, whenever you can have the numbers back up what your eye test is showing you, that is validating. And where it's most useful, though, is probably when the numbers challenge what your eyes are telling you, and then you can dig deeper. I think that it's a combination of what all of what everyone's, Matt Bowen is talking about, Lawrence, what you were mentioning. Like, did he go from 1 to 2 to 3 quickly? No, I don't think he did. But I also don't think the Bears had a 1, a 2, and a 3. Like, the fact that you can point, like, a man, that was a tipped pass from Damir Bird.
Yeah, man.
You should be throwing it to Damir Bird.
No.
Like,
I agree.
And Darnell Mooney is really good if he's the 3, and he's, yep, and he's maybe good enough to be the 2 eventually, but he's not a 1. And he was a 1 for a huge percentage of the season. And the 1, depending on who you want to blame and what your version of the events were, like, Allen Robinson had the worst year of his football life this season. Going back to Penn State, going back to Jacksonville, going back to Mitch Trubisky. Like, for whatever reason that happened, Allen Robinson was no longer a number one receiver this season. And so Fields, we have to grade it on a curve. Not only a rookie curve, not only a Matt Nagy was bad curve, but he just did not have the dudes to throw to.
A Bears skill position talent curve.
Like, but what I think about Fields and those numbers, I, like, Kirk Cousins is the opposite in that he has
great numbers, but you can watch him on film and go, that guy is going to get you beat.
Right, and I think
not this year, for whatever that's worth.
But I think that a lot of quarterbacks in the NFL, if you had Thielen and Jefferson and Dalvin Cook, would put up awesome numbers, right? Like, he had arguably the best trio of skill position talent in the league in terms of two receivers and a running back. Aaron Rodgers, what's amazing about what he does, and yes, Devontae Adams is incredible, but, like, that guy throws the ball down the field and only had 4 interceptions. Like, there's no check down to his game. And that's what I hope Fields is. Like, Fields, in terms of air yards per attempt, was also very high this year. Like, he throws the ball down the field even when he's got no one really to throw it to. And so I hope that they figure out a way, whether it's Mike Williams from the Chargers or Mike Gallup, but, like, guys,
man,
who
that'd be fun.
Dude, I'm really close to being all in on Mike Williams. You know, my only fear on Mike Williams is how many times I've thought he was going to be super productive in fantasy, and he has not.
That's your personal bias.
I know, but every year I think, oh, here comes the Mike Williams breakout year. Here comes statistically the Mike Williams breakout year, and it hasn't really come. But, you know, he's got a real good one on the other side in Keenan Allen.
Yeah, and
sure.
Austin Eckler had, like, 18 touchdowns this year, yeah. And, you know, but...
But I'm bringing personal fantasy football bias to the Mike Williams conversation.
We all have our biases. The people you can trust are the ones who admit them. I want them to figure out a way to get Justin Fields some dudes who, when he throws the ball down the field, because he does have that touchdown to check down mentality, they can turn some of those tipped pass interceptions into catches or incompletions. You know, like, he just did not have anyone like that on the team this year.
I don't think he was helped. I think you're right, Danny, and I don't think he was helped by the design of plays and the way the progressions themselves, like who they were looking at as far as route development and where his eyes should go. And that's where, Spiegs, you're so on the money with the D-Nagian process.
Yes, he must be D-Nagied. Yes.
You got to get him in that process. You got to get all of that bad stuff out of there. And hopefully he clicks. And I'm with you 100%. I don't want him to lose touchdown to check down. I want him to be looking to make the big play. Because if you look at the guys that are successful in the league, that's what they're doing. But the amount of time that it takes you to get, like, I hesitate to even bring up, like, Tom Brady or Aaron Rodgers because of who they are. But that's one of the reasons why they're so great, is that they're like, okay, I can anticipate this is going to work, and I'm willing to put the ball in the air anyway, even though I don't see it.
Mm-hmm.
I know where the play is designed to go, and I'm going to put the ball where Devontae Adams is going to be. If they don't see it materializing, like, in that half a second, they know, okay, I've got this guy in the flat. I've got this guy who's running an inside route, and I now have to trust that those guys are going to be where they're supposed to be. It's really kind of like the concept of not having to see it to throw it.
Well, yes. I really believe the number one thing you can do for a young quarterback to set them up to learn is protect them. And Matt Nagy didn't do it.
Yep.
Like, that's the number one thing. Give him time. Let him look. Let him adjust to speed and the options and everything with plenty of time. That's why, as you said, Danny, I think we'll go down the worst game plan in the history of offensive football.
The Cleveland game.
Against the Cleveland Browns. I mean, my God. A rookie quarterback's first start. We got Fields for the first time. You sang about it. And that was the game plan. That was the game plan.
Yeah.
Against Myles Garrett and Jadeveon Clowney, two number one overall edge rushers, right?
Yeah.
It's insane. Absolutely pig-headed Hungarian stubbornness insanity.
It was. It's over, though.
Yes, it is.
He survived it, and he had a great game the next week.
I think you got, yeah, but I think you do have to reteach him. You're going to have to protect. You're going to have to overprotect as you reteach him, especially a new system.
I don't know.
I think Ryan Poles is gonna prioritize that.
I think we'll see. It depends what's available. Like, we'll talk about it a ton. The Ja'Marr Chase example is a fascinating one. Like, they have a limited number of resources. I think, relative to the rest of the NFL, the Bears' offensive line is better than the Bears' receiving core. Do you disagree with that?
No, I guess
that's an interesting question.
It is an interesting question. I think I don't disagree with it just because the Bears' receiving core is laughable. They have two under contract, and one of them is Daz Newsome.
But that's my point. That's the point. Like, neither is great. I'm not saying that either is a finished product. Both need work, and you can work on both simultaneously. So this is not a zero-sum game, either or binary conversation. But which is the bigger fix? I would argue that it's the receiving core, the pass catchers, the people that he throws the ball to.
Mm-hmm.
And because I think you got one guy. In fact, I know you have
you,
one
you
guy.
You do, because you only have two under contract.
Right. And so, but I think that there are more pieces there on the line to be serviceable.
I agree.
And so I hope that they don't get terrified by that Cleveland game or convinced that the sack numbers cannot be improved on by Justin Fields took a lot of those sacks himself.
Right. And it should be said that I was really thinking parallel worlds here. Yes, talent acquisition and fix the edge as you see fit, Ryan Poles, but schematically. You know, go ahead, man. Like, go ahead and have two tight ends a lot early on. Like, go ahead and really do establish the run early on a lot. Go ahead and have Max protect and Chip help on that offensive line.
But it's also a cumulative thing. Like, football's so great because everybody feeds off of each other. Cooper Kupp helps the Rams' offensive line. Not by his pass blocking, but because he gets open immediately. Like, the second the ball is snapped, the dude is open.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and so then you can get the ball out quicker, and then it's tougher for a pass rush to get home. So it all is there. So if they feel like the best way to improve Justin Fields based on the resources that are available to them with the free agents and their draft capital is better blockers, okay, cool, go for it. But if they had, all of a sudden, three good receivers, and one of them was a slot dude who gets open instantly, and the other is a Mike Williams type who, oh man, the blitz is coming, and I can just throw it to him, and I believe that he can come down and catch it.
Yeah.
That helps your offensive line, too.
No, it definitely does. By the way, I think I've said I was waiting for the Mike Williams breakout. I think 76 catches and 1,146 yards is kind of the breakout.
Yeah.
I think we kind of give it to him right there.
He's good, man.
Yeah.
And again, playing with Justin Herbert with talent all over the field really helps.
Bring that catch radius to Justin Fields. Bring that Huagi to Justin Fields. Yes, sir.
Did Hungarian stubbornness and sanity open for Brother in the 90s, or were you guys opening for them?
No, we opened for them, man. We tried to negotiate a change in time slot.
You wish you could have been Hungarian stubbornness.
They were not interested. I mean, like, they wouldn't even have the conversation with us, Lawrence. They're like,
no. They shut you down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We are the 10:30 act here at the Double Door. You go on at 9, you do 40 minutes, and you can't use our drum kit. screw you.
Man, that is quite a rider that they got. You know? Like that's messed up.
Oh, man, sometimes you play that set in front of the big band's drum kit. And you just got to pretend that, no, this is how we wanted to set up. It wasn't.
Lawrence, Joe Buck today. The 3 o'clock hour is an hour of Joe's. Buck and Ostrowski will join us. Kyle Turley at 4 and Hub Arkish at 4:40. I had a very weird experience with the Bulls that I think that some people will be able to relate to. And
did the fun police try to arrest you too?
No one tried to arrest me. There was no arresting. I got duped by the box score. I'll explain. I was not able to watch live, and
like they got their asses whooped, but it didn't look like it when you just looking like the end of that game.
What Correct. A weird thing for me this morning. I was so confused as to what was happening. It was an out-of-body experience. But then Spiegs, he teased it yesterday. He will tell us what he's doing tonight, today.
It's a 24-hour
tease.
People
have been waiting.
Yeah.
So it's very exciting.
Heard from a lot of folks.
Yeah. We're going to kill it today.
Including
in the
Hungarian stubbornness and sanity.
That's right. That's right. Well, have a good day.
All right, boys. Have a show. I'll see you tomorrow.
Hi, my name is Lloyd Lockridge, and I'm the host of a new podcast from Odyssey called Family Lore. In this podcast, I'm going to have people on to tell unusual and sometimes far-fetched stories about their families.
I've heard my whole life that she invented the margarita.
And then we're going to investigate those stories and find out how much of it is true.
He gets a patent 1 month before the Wright brothers. Oh, my God.
Please follow and listen to Family Lore, an Odyssey podcast, available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.
Ready to level up? Chumba Casino is your playbook to fun. It's free to play with no purchase necessary. Enjoy hundreds of online social games like blackjack, slots, and solitaire anytime, anywhere with fresh releases every week. Whether you're at home or on the go, let Chumba Casino bring the excitement to you. Plus, get free daily login bonuses and a free welcome bonus. Join now for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Play Chumba Casino today. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. T&Cs apply.
Did you know that there are over 200 legends like Andrew Jones, Albert Pujols, Felix Hernandez, and Ken Griffey Jr. in MLB The Show 26? Collect them all and current all-stars to build your perfect lineup. MLB The Show 26 is available now on PlayStation 5, Xbox Series XS, and Nintendo Switch. Rated E for everyone. Officially licensed by MLB Players, Inc.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And we have the podcast Office Ladies. Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories and lots of laughs.
Follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.